Okay, it's an end of an era. It's an end of an era. 13 years, Dwayne Wade, no longer a member of the Miami Heat. I am joined here, of course, by Dave Ramil. Follow me on Twitter at DRamil13. I am your host, Ernest Christian, the Hot Hoops Podcast. Dave, there's no ways to dip into this podcast and discussing this scenario, this situation with Dwayne Wade. Obviously, this is 2 years in a row where he's had a dispute with management, the Miami Heat, Pat Riley, Mickey Arison, and others. But I think still processing this, it's still, even though my personal opinion that I thought it was best for the Heat going forward, that they had to make a big decision here in terms of taking a hard line with Wade. It's still, right in the moment, shocking that after 13 years, we're not going to hear Dwayne Wade next year when opening night starts for the Miami Heat. What was your reaction last night once we heard officially that Dwayne Wade and the Bulls were on a crash course?
Disbelief more than anything else. Like you pointed out, he's been a part of the team for so long that I never really envisioned. I thought this song and dance that we've seen over the last couple of years would end with the usual resolution, which is him under contract with Miami. I thought when he, he's the one who created the phrase "Heat Lifer," I thought he meant it. And clearly things got to a point where they were irreparable. Relationships were damaged beyond repair, and he needed to move on. And it's probably, like you said, also best for Miami to have moved on. So, but yes, I mean, I read about it, and even this morning I woke up still kind of numb from the whole thing because we're stupid and we love sports the way we do. And I realize that this is the first day I've woken up in a long time in a post-Wade world in Miami. It's just bizarre.
It's so weird. Yeah. Like, I remember saying on this podcast last year after LeBron left. And then, of course, when Wade and the Heat had their first, back and forth in terms of, contract disputes. I remember saying on this podcast that as big as it was for the Heat to lose LeBron, obviously, because of the player he is, LeBron is arguably a top five player of all time, and still in his prime. Losing Wade in terms of the community, in terms of the Heat culture, would have hurt more because of the investment, that Wade has put into this ball club for 13 years.
I mean, the LeBron era was short lived. It was 4 years. Yeah. It was a grain of sand in a beach as far as in comparison to what Wade's done for 13 years. But I mean, to me, I think it's very similar to maybe like the departure of Alonzo Mourning in 2002, 2003, yes. And that was even due to injury. And you recognized, Riley's hard stance, not wanting to give more money to Alonzo for what it was. And it seemed like a fair idea at the time because you didn't really know whether or not he would ever be able to play at the same level. He never really did. I mean, he was always more of a contributor from that point forward. And he took a lot of money to go sign in New Jersey at that time with the Nets. And so that was pretty devastating because that was, Alonzo Mourning and Riley had their, they were linked from the moment that he made that trade in 1995.
His first transaction.
And he redefined the franchise, yeah.
That was Riley's first transaction. Yeah, absolutely.
So it's bizarre. And now we have to move forward. And I think it's an interesting point, an interesting turning point for the Miami Heat franchise. I know a lot of people don't want to even consider a future. So many people I've seen in Twitter that are like younger perhaps, and maybe for them, this is the only way they've ever been able to define the Miami Heat. They didn't know the era before Wade, and they're not sure how to anticipate what will happen afterwards, but it's a dark time for Heat fans, which is, that's the honesty of people who love sports.
Dave, they're not us. We've gone through all this stuff. We went long maybe before. So. I mean, I'm the maybe same so. Guy who cried when Glenn Rice got traded for Alonzo Mourning in 95. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So let's, we got a little bit, you and I got a lot of history that to, we've been through worse. But this is pretty shocking to say the least in terms of just the perception in terms of what the Heat are going to face next year. Let's go back, let's peek back a little bit about the details here, because there's obviously been a lot of details that's come out in the last days prior to Wade committing to go to Chicago. Okay, There are no winners here, okay, in the situation. I think both parties, Dwayne Wade, the Miami Heat, both, at the end of the day, really screwed this thing up. You know, whether Miami should have signed an extension 2 years ago and given 3 years that he wanted originally, or whether promises were made and the Heat didn't come up to that promise. Both these parties, I think, screwed this thing up. And I think time will heal all. This is not a unfixable sure. situation. Once Wade retires, he will have his jersey retired. He'll get the statue outside American Airlines Arena. That's going to happen. Trust me, that's changed. But I just think now, in terms of the way this ended, there are no winners here. The losers here really are the fans, more than anything else.
Well, I think of it as the other way around. I think right now the pangs of pain and sentiment and everything else that everybody's feeling right now make it hard to project what's going to happen in the future. But I think there have been no losers here. I think we saw a very interesting piece from Tom Ziller of SB Nation writing about how, in all likelihood, this might have been a very carefully orchestrated scenario by Pat Riley. That he knew that that if he nudged him just enough, and then this is Wade we're talking about, if he nudged Wade just enough and maybe ignored him just enough, that he would force his way out of Miami, which is clearly what he did. And for Wade, look, he gets to go home. It's a nice narrative. He gets a hell of a lot of money, more than he was going to be able to collect from Miami without trading Josh McRoberts. I mean, if you want to pin anything on Riley, it's the unwillingness to trade McRoberts, perhaps, so that he couldn't find a taker in such short notice.
Well, real quick, I'm glad you said that, because a lot of the people who are pissed off at Riley for not upping the offer. Here's what I found out last night, and I'm sure you found out the same thing also too. McRoberts was on the table, but every team that was willing to take McRoberts' contract also wanted Justice Winslow as part of the deal. And to me, I say, right. If you're a Heat fan who's logical and forward-thinking, are you willing to give up your future for the next probably 10, 13 years, like Wade has given you, for maybe a year or two of Dwayne Wade past his prime?
Right.
Because that's what it came down to, Dave, at the end of the day.
And people don't see that. Look, I mean, Josh Richardson came kind of burst onto the scene in March, mid-March, April, and then somewhat in the playoffs. But I've been seeing him up close in Summer League, and I can tell you that this kid's going to make a transition. I think his shooting has become phenomenal. Mm-hmm. His defense has become as steady as ever. And as far as Justice Winslow, I think he's got that potential. Like, the offense is still very much a work in progress. But his first step is glorious. Like, his ability to get past people is something that you just can't underestimate. It's almost like, again, I wasn't happy with him last year because I thought he was kind of taking it easy, but maybe that's just how skilled he is. The fact that he can just get past that defender as quickly as he does, I think it's an optimistic future for Miami, because I think both Richardson and Winslow are going to be incredible contributors from Miami, hopefully for a few years more, at least 3 years more. You know, they're both under contract, a very affordable rookie contract at this point. So,
right. And the thing is, too, also, and I can't, the reason why, and I'll give some of my some personal shed light here, my personal thoughts on this. I was already on the let Wade walk bandwagon days ago. By July 2nd, I was like, well, listen, I think 2 years, $40 million is more enough money for a guy that's past his prime, for a guy that, okay, you give him that money, and then this team is no better than it was last year. So take it or leave it. You know what I'm saying? I understand there's some situations where he's owed money because LeBron left, he opted out. But if you read Devin Levitard's piece from the Miami Herald, there's a lot more than just that. Henry Thomas's agent almost actually kind of screwed him in a sense too, because of the Chris Bosh contract. There's so many things here that Heat fans who aren't necessarily don't care about the details aren't privy to, like we are, that no details, you know, that they don't understand. Miami was willing to pay the money. If they move McRoberts' contract, there's difference for Wade's money. But I'm sorry, I'm with Riley here. You gotta draw a line in the sand here. And to me, Justice Winslow is that line for me. I'm sorry, it is.
No, I agree. I think he's the future of the Heat. I think maybe not one as bright as it was with Dwayne Wade in 2003 or 4. I mean, I think they got, you know, they felt very lucky to have a transcendent player like Dwayne Wade. I think he became, you know, clearly one of the best shooting guards in NBA history. And They probably weren't expecting that when they selected him 10th, you know, fifth overall in 2003, but he turned out to be a hell of a find. And I think, you know, you have to look at Winslow and Richardson's potential and say these are the building blocks of the future. You've got a younger center now in Hassan Whiteside. You know, Goran Dragic is under contract for a few more years. And look, let's be honest, you know, you could get Chris Bosh back at full health and have him be, you know, an incredible boost to the team. You know, this is a guy who's still a very, very good player in today's NBA, and we forget about that. You know, his ability to space the floor, the things he can do, the way he can guard multiple positions.
I mean, that's a big if, though, Dave. I mean, let's be honest, that is a big if, though, because of his health.
Sure, sure. Look, but then, but that's the caveat then. Look, if you get Chris Bosh back at full health, and he's willing to play, he can, and he's cleared by all medical staff to play, then you're getting a great player back, you know, arguably one of the best free agents available this summer, you know, maybe second to Kevin Durant or whatever. So that's a good find there for the team. It's an immediate boost. If he doesn't play, then the caveat, you know, then the alternative is that his salary comes off the books. So it's a win-win situation, but it wasn't quite as clearly in Miami's favor to lock in Dwayne Wade for another couple of years. Now, I wasn't at the same position that you are. I actually thought it probably would have been better because I think it's better to sign Wade because, you know, because of his significance to the team, because of the fact that the team maybe wasn't going to get any better, but because I don't know if you necessarily want to take that step back and losing Wade. With Golden State signing Durant, I don't think anybody has a realistic chance at a title. So if you're not going to compete for a title realistically, what are you going to do? Are you going to be an early playoff exit?
Get past LeBron. Forget Golden State. LeBron is still LeBron. But, oh, by the way, he's a champion. That's on the record.
Well, I mean, but that's a, I mean, I don't want to say it was a fluke in Cleveland for them to have gone past Golden State, well, but I mean, a lot of things had to fall a certain way.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you, but I mean, you know,
Bogut's injury, Draymond suspension, which, you know, a lot of conspiracy theorists over in the Bay Area want to talk about, but whatever. That's a whole other issue.
Right. I'll say it again, though. Once again, you know, it's Miami was willing to pay the money. You know, that $10 million number that came out there that Henry Thomas and Wade's camp put out there.
That was a false truth
because what that number really was wasn't necessarily that wasn't an offer they made him. There was a levy of offers they were looking at based on if they get KD, if they keep Whiteside. There was a levy of situations that somehow it became a PR spin that okay. Basically, the Heat and Wade are having a PR battle for who can win more of the sympathy card from the public. So, putting out a $10 million, you know, the Heat offering only $10 million, you know, puts the public on Wade's side. Oh, you're underpaying Dwayne Wade's services and all this, and when in fact that wasn't the case at all. I mean, I don't believe that for a second.
I think the offer was legitimate, though. I think they actually did say, look, you know, $10 million, I think maybe was a lowball offer, but I think it was.
David. I don't think it was an actual offer. Hey, $10 million. I think it was scenarios that were presented, and Henry Thomas and Dwayne Wade put the number out there just for PR sake.
Okay, that I can agree with, but I think Ethan Skolnick and Dan Le Batard and others have all said that $10 million offer, that actually happened. Whether or not there were strings attached to it, you know, within context of if we can get Durant, if we can sign Whiteside, if we can get player X through free agency – maybe those scenarios were detailed in the offer to Henry Thomas and Wade, but they were legitimate. I think they actually have.
You're right there. Remember, that also offer might have been Wade weeks before free agency started. Because what happened here with the Heat 2? Because Wade reacted 2 days before free agency started. I think Riley misjudged the market. And I know why Wade reacted too. I think Dwayne Wade was in Spain. And he saw Evan Turner get $4 million, $72 million. I'm thinking, really? Are you serious? No. That can't happen on my watch. So, I get Wade's point of view, and I think the game changed on Riley. And then when you have Whiteside sitting there saying, pay me now while I go to Texas, you know, what do you do there at that point? You know, so here's the bottom line. This is what I think the bottom line here, reacting, is that even if Wade came back this year, or for the next 2 years, whatever, this team is no better than they were last year, in my opinion, unless major things happen with this roster, which means the rooks, the Rook 1, Rook 2, now who'll be second-year guys next season, take major steps forward. Hassan Whiteside, major step up. Goran Dragic, you know, starts to figure out how to play consistently. There were so many things that had to happen that I think Pat Riley and the front office realized, you know what, we're no better than we were last year. Let's clear the deck. Let's go forward and see what happens here. If Wade wants to come back, he's more welcome to come back at this offer, and that's it. I don't necessarily take sides here. I see both sides' points here. But I actually like what Heat did here. I think the Heat really, in a lot of ways, yeah, it'll look bad right now in terms of publicity, in terms of the fans, and certainly some fans are going to be pissed off about Wade not being here. But let's face it. Let's say the Heat are, they get a Westbrook next year. You be mad about Riley about that now, looking back a year later? Hell no. Nah.
I think a lot of people probably wouldn't be as happy with it, to be honest with you. I think
sentiments.
You're right, dude. I understand, but I mean that's part of why we even watch it in the first place, is because there's an emotional attachment to what we see on the court. I mean, and for us, maybe it's a little bit less than it is for other fans, but you know they're going through a major stage of grief right now. I mean, and part of it is also the fact that, you know, he grew here, like he actually aged here. We saw him from a fresh-faced kid right out of Marquette. And saw him evolve and go through all the stuff that he went through, you know, on and off the court. And, you know, to be part of that early championship in 2006, 3 years into his career, that was such a turning point. You know, he changed the face of the franchise,
still,
you know.
Still more impact for me than the last two he won. To me, 06 still has more impact for me personally than 2012 and 13 because of the it was the first one. It was the one it was Riley. It was so much of that team. Whereas the last two was actually expected to happen at some point.
So. Do you feel better about the decision that Wade made based on him going to Chicago and that he can rationalize it as somewhat, quote-unquote, going home?
Yeah, I could. I mean, now, false positives here for me because I've made it very clear through the years and I've been consistent. You know, I detest the Chicago Bulls. I've detested them since Michael Jordan was there. You know, was there. Right. So there is some conflict there. So I'm not going to root for the Bulls, obviously, still. Even Dwayne Wade going there, does that change my mind on that situation? Okay.
Personally, I think they're going to be ugly to watch. I mean, that backcourt is brutal.
From a basketball perspective, the move doesn't make any sense to me. To be honest with you, okay, they might be now a playoff team with Dwayne Wade on the roster. But to me, they're not. I'll be honest with you. Even if the Knicks are healthy next year, the Knicks are better than the Bulls, okay? So they're no better than like a 7-18 in the Eastern Conference. Honestly, and if Bosch is back next year, honestly, let's say those things I said a couple minutes ago about the rookies stepping up. Dragic, who, by the way, will benefit now from Wade not being here now.
Because absolutely. Now Pace, he's an all-star. Them.
Now he's, you'll see the Dragic that everybody was hoping to see. Run, because Spoelstra now will be able to implement the system one plan, which was just run.
He's going to be phenomenal next year.
I agree. People are soft on Dragic now. Wait till next year and call me back later. But let's assume all those things happen for the Heat. The rosters are a wash. They're a wash.
Oh, I think they might actually be, you know, in Miami's favor, to be honest with you. I mean, Jimmy Butler, I think, is still Chicago's best player. And he's not even necessarily as consistent. I mean, Wade's too ball dominant. I think it's going to be a struggle there. I've talked to Chicago fans, and they're actually kind of terrified. You know, on the surface, it's a big name and everything else, but they're scared of what that locker room combination is going to be like because all of them have had their issues in the past. Rondo.
Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo. I mean, hello, do you guys know the history of this thing? I mean, come on. It's just to me, it's just like I get. I think Wade made a principal move, but to me, I think both sides won in the end. Wade got his money. He got some clarity. I think Pat Riley, sure. Honestly, Andy Ellsberg, Mickey Arison could sit back right now and just breathe for a year. Okay, let's relax.
Should we talk about what happens next for Miami?
Yes, I mean, right now. That's my segue.
Excellent.
So what's next? Okay, first off, here's a couple things pending for the Heat. Tyler Johnson was offered a 4-year, $50 million offer sheet from the Brooklyn Nets. The Heat have 3 days from today, I believe, now to match it. Now right. With Wade gone, okay, now with not a lot of wing players left in the market, do you match that? Now, before I ask you the question, I'm going to frame for the listeners here. The offer sheet's as follows. It's very friendly, team-friendly for the first 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a thing called a poison pill. Which the back end of that contract, years 3 and 4, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it jumps from, like, I think $7 million in year 2 to, like, I think 15 or 16 in year 3 and then 19 in year 4.
Am I correct there? 18 in year three, 19 in year four.
Right. So if you're Miami, given the fact there's very little wing guys left out there, okay, and I know Todd Johnson has a little bit of a following here in Miami in his one year and a half playing here, do you match the offer, David Ramil?
Absolutely not. I love Tyler. I think he's great. I think he's fun to watch. I think already at his size and what we've seen over the last couple of years, the limited couple of years that he spent in the league, he's had injury issues because of that size, because of his aggressive style of play. I think it's disastrous to think he's going to be able to stay healthy for the next 4 years, especially when you consider he's going to be making $37 million of that $50 million contract in the last 2 years alone. You're not going to find any takers. For a guy like Riley, who's looking for financial flexibility, should they be able to land a big free agent next year or the following year's class, this is completely antithetical. As much as I love Tyler Johnson, I think he's a better fit for a team in like Brooklyn that doesn't have any playoff aspirations, is looking to build a culture there, and wants a guy who can give 110% effort constantly. And I think Tyler is a good fit there, not so much in Miami. Are you going to start him over Josh Richardson at the two? I don't think so.
No. I think now, with the way things are going, and we have said too in this podcast that, and many people have said this also too in media alike, that Richardson is not a point guard. He's a two guard, really. And so now with Wade being gone, you insert the two rookies. Second year guys, Richardson at the two, and the three, of course, would be Winslow. Dave, and I'm not even saying this because people say, oh, well, you're saying this because the Seven Shades of Grief. No, I'm actually really excited about the Heat's future.
You know what I first thought of when I heard about the Wade news, after the initial shock, of course, once it settled in a little bit, I thought of the 2003-04 season. Ironically enough, Dwayne Wade's, which I think a lot of longtime Heat fans would argue is probably one of the more exciting in Heat franchise history. I mean, Lamar Odom, Caron Butler, you know, Brian Grant, Eddie Jones toward in the tail end of his career, even Rafer skipped my Lou Alston. I mean, that was a great, fun team to watch, the way that they had that late season push in order to get into the playoffs, the first round upset. And yes, I'll look back at it and remember more than anything else Dwayne Wade's contribution as a rookie and think positively on that. And yes, that was the beginning of his greatness, I think. But at the same time, that was a team that had very low expectations and were able to exceed those. I think next year's Miami Heat squad could be right up there too. I mean, we're going to see an incredible, I think, pattern between Goran Dragic and Hassan Whiteside. There's going to be a chemistry there that I don't think we got a chance to see last year, except for maybe the briefest of moments, because Wade was so ball dominant the way he controlled the ball. I think Goran Dragic is going to be pushing the pace the way he couldn't when Dwayne Wade was deliberately, slowly bringing the ball up the court. It's not to knock Wade necessarily, but you have to understand what he was doing. I think you and I do, but a lot of Heat fans that are so emotionally invested don't recognize that there have been problems with Wade's playing style for years. I remember arguing and yelling at the TV back in 2008, wondering why he was taking so long to bring the ball up court. You know, why didn't he just push the pace a little bit? And so I think with Wade gone, you're going to see that faster, quicker pace. It's going to be Goran Dragic's team, and I think it's going to benefit to have those two young players, Richardson and Winslow, going alongside him at 100 miles an hour. It's going to be fun and exciting. I think you're going to have Whiteside bringing up the rear and catching those lobs or cleaning up rebounds for a dunk. I think it's going to be an exciting time. Maybe it's not going to be as electric. I think you're going to be missing Wade more than anything else in close moments when you're down one and you need somebody to take that big shot. But who knows? Maybe we could be seeing an emergence from Richardson or Winslow. I mean, nobody expected Wade to be that closer until he finally became it in 2004. So maybe Rooks 1 or 2 will be able to take that next step. Who knows?
It's a very, like I said, transition. And look, things aren't always forever. You know, things do change. And we have not entered that next phase now. And obviously the next thing to address is Chris Bosh and his future because he was on Bill Simmons' new show last night. He didn't say anything really about his future with Miami in terms of whether he'll play next year or not. I know his intent is to play, but no doctor will clear him at this time. My opinion at the point is that if he wants to play, let him play. And it may benefit Miami in the future too, because if he can play and he's good enough, he will look attractive to teams, and he'll be another trade asset for the Heat to look forward to in the next year or so. So I think if you're the Miami Heat at this point, If he wants to play, let him play. Screw it. That's it.
I don't know that it's so easy. I mean,
well, he's demanding playing. What are we going to do?
Well, I think you kind of have to protect the player from himself, and then you also have to protect the franchise. Look, if we've seen anything from this, situation with Wade and Riley, is that that Riley is capable of making a tough decision, even at what could be seen as face value as a bad move. And I don't think if he wants Chris off the books, then I think he's just going to tell him, look, we're not going to play you one way or the other. And then his contract will be voided. Most of it will be paid through insurance, which is my understanding of what will happen. He'll get his money, and then eventually he'll become a free agent. And theoretically, he could come out of retirement the way Brandon Roy did, and join another team. If that's the case, that's up to him. But I think Riley doesn't want him to play for the Heat anymore, and I think that's a tough situation. It's difficult to imagine them drawing that line with a guy like Chris who re-signed and everything else. But I think if you don't know what you're going to get, if you keep tying your future to a guy who's going to be only able to contribute 40 to 50 games at most every season and then have a late season push fall apart, well, I just don't think you can do that anymore. And Riley's realistic. And, it's tough to see that, right? Because you want it to be all about fun and games and everything else. But the reality is that it's a business. It'll always be that way. And you have to make a tough decision. And Riley's one willing to do it. Has always been willing to do it.
And I'll tell you what, now with Wade being gone, it's easier for him now to make this decision now because, Wade being there made it a little more complicated. Now Wade not being anymore. And now the Heat are in a different direction. Their franchise player is walked away. So I think the Bosch thing will get solved a lot sooner than people realize.
Maybe. That's a good point. Do you think Riley was too harsh in not even making a phone call to Wade, which is what's been reported?
I don't know. I guess Riley wanted to take himself out the equation. Maybe there's a lot more emotional attachment there with Wade and him because he did coach Wade. He did help draft Wade. So maybe. There's a lot of that. Which is why you heard that Mickey Arison was the guy who went to the meeting yesterday in New York, not Pat Riley. Right. So there's some of that. I do think that there's some emotional things there. That's why I think yes, it's business, but I believe also that Riley did care about the relationship too. I mean, I don't know if you saw the text that he sent Levitard.
Yes, I did. Yeah,
that tells you all it is you need to know there.
But at the same time, it also further emphasizes the fact that maybe this is a decision that he wanted to make. That maybe
part of the plan. Yeah, I speculated weeks ago that I think the Heat were kind of nudging him out the door, nudging him. Okay, go see what you're gonna make out there. Go, we're gonna call your bluff. Yes, you have offers. Cool, Denver, take it. Go ahead, Chicago. Okay, home, Milwaukee. Went to college there. Okay, cool. I mean. Even the Cleveland angle, and if you want to go Cleveland, that's up to you, man. I mean, but Dwayne Wade right now, even returning to this team, does not make the Heat better than they were last year, let alone the last 4 years with LeBron's here. So that's call what it is, okay? So I got
two questions for you.
Yes.
What happens next as far as Udonis Haslem is concerned?
I think that's over. I think if Wade's gone, UD's gone. That's easy.
He signs elsewhere or he retires?
Probably retire. I mean, is he getting offers somewhere else?
I don't think he has because I think everybody's already assumed. I think everybody assumed that he was going to return to Miami.
I mean, they can afford him now on a vet minimum. I mean, right now because of Wade's contract being freed up. So
sure,
I mean, maybe he does come back. Who knows? But is that really? I heard one of the hangouts with Wade also was that he wanted UD back as well too with him. And once again, the money right now doesn't work. So
it's interesting.
Second question.
I hadn't heard that.
Second question.
I don't know. I really don't know because I think Haslem and Miami are linked so completely. But I would have thought the same thing of Miami, of Wade in Miami. So I'm not really sure. I think he comes back if he wants to, and I think Miami would be happy to have him back at a reasonably cheap salary. Because
he can be a benefit now because of that. There are no real leaders in the team anymore. Wade's gone.
Well, I mean, I think he was always going to be the emotional leader. I think he was always going to be that locker room presence. I don't think Wade was necessarily ever that much of a leader or emotional presence. That was never really for him. It was always better to lead by example rather than through word. And I think that's what Haslam's role is. You know, he's the one who gets in a rookie's ear and kind of tells him, this is what you got to do. You know, this is how you do it. This is the Heat culture, et cetera. And I think for Wade is more about implementing it on the court. Haslam is more about teaching it and actually talking about it and, you know, learn it the hard way. Cause he represents more of that struggle, that grind, having to, you know, come from nothing and build yourself up and work your way onto the roster and take nothing for granted. So I think when you have when you look at Haslam's career, it's a better example of what the Heat are trying to implement.
Could you imagine Hassan Whiteside as the emotional leader of the Heat going forward?
No, I cannot. I cannot. Which is another scary thing too, because yeah, I mean, if without Haslam coming back, if Chris Bosh doesn't come back, and I don't know that Chris is necessarily a natural leader either. I think he's just more of a secondary role, but he plays it very, very well. I don't know that he's necessarily going to be the guy that leads him emotionally and things of that sort. He's perhaps far too cerebral for that sort of thing. I think they're going to be a little bit lacking leadership. You know, who takes the next step? Who kind of leads the charge when it's the waning moments of a game and things like that? It's going to be interesting to see.
I can't wait. It's going to be very exciting. I think it's exciting. People are going to be pissed off when I say this, but I think it's going to be a very exciting future of the Heat, at least in the short term, at least right now. Are they a title team? No, but even Wade are not a title team. So, I mean, let's move forward and see if Riley was right.
Yeah, less predictable. If nothing else, it'll definitely be wilder and difficult to predict. Maybe they tank. Maybe they fall apart without Chris Bosh. Maybe Dragic doesn't take that next step. Maybe the rookies don't either. And maybe Whiteside just says, I got my money, I'm done. But for now, you don't know what's going to happen. It could be a very exciting time.
Right, definitely.
I got another question for you.
Quickly, so last question. I got to wrap it up.
All right. Dwayne Wade, does he come back at the end of his Chicago tenure and retire with Miami?
I can see a scenario, yes. I can see a scenario. I think this will heal. This situation is not a situation that will just, you know, end the relationship. I think at some point when time happens, time will heal all wounds, and Wade and Riley and Arison will get together, have dinner at Prime 101 when we're in Hell, Miami, and they'll be fine. Trust me. I just think that there's too much invested in this team that Dwayne did, that even though in the short term he needed to do this for the sake of the Heat and for the sake of himself, I do think that overall when it's all said, look, Shaq left her on ugly terms.
Sure.
Okay? And they're going to retire his jersey next season, okay?
Right.
So
Alonzo left and came back champion,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I know Dan Gilbert and LeBron don't talk, really. I mean, that's the reports anyway. But LeBron went back to play for his team, okay?
Right.
So if they can do that, you don't think Wade and freaking Pat Riley could, after 13 years of success, could make that work? Especially when you're getting a statue in front of the arena. It's going to happen. So why would you know? So.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Anyway, that's Dave Ramil on Twitter, DRamil13. I'm Ernest Christian. Follow me on Twitter at EJChristian7. You can also check out all our work at HotHoops.com. Dave, thank you so much, as always. Come on the podcast.
You got it. You got it, buddy.
Good job, man. Y'all the first one to call it hate. So I coordinate my moves with the spirit. God the conductor, he orchestrates. And the path that I follow is the one set by Christ, the word that he formulates. You think this is about race?